You're listening to Ignite Your Success, a podcast that inspires fitness professionals to build a strong business that enables them to serve more people and engineer the lifestyle they desire. It's Brad Shepherd here, and together with Jason Yabanowicz, we're best known for running Trainer HQ, a community of passionate and profit-hungry fitness business owners that make a massive difference in others' lives every day. Each episode, we'll unpack for you exactly what's working and deliver best practice strategies so you can confidently grow your business and make a huge impact. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Ignite Your Ultimate Success podcast. Now, today, I've got a very special guest, someone who I go a very long way back with, and we'll unpack a bit about our story along the way. But I want to introduce to you Mr. Hamish Bowman. Welcome,
thank,
sir.
Thank you, Bradley. Makes me think how far back. I'm nervous, but I'll let you start.
Jeez, man, there's a lot of stories, isn't there?
I'm not sure
which ones we can unpack, no, as a matter of a fact.
I'm nervous. I woke up early this morning just thinking what's on your notepad there, but come and give it to me.
We've got a wealth of things that you've got a wealth of knowledge to unpack, and so there's some really key parts of this. Number one is you've got a huge extensive background in the area of property, and you've also excelled in the area of sales, and there's also a bit of athletic talent in there too, those that might be interested in hearing. So I want to hear first about the property stuff, because I find that part fascinating. So can you backtrack in terms of like your background with property, you know, what got you into the game?
Sure. If you actually ask me what got me into the game, I was desperate to get into university at school because all my mates were going there. And I thought, well, the only way I'm going to get there based on my marks was to do a town planning degree, which was a thread of property. So I got onto a town planning degree, got my degree, and thought, okay, well, this is a segue into property. Oh, I saw a lot of local people making money where I lived, and they were developing and big houses. And I had an early sort of attraction to property, sort of based on where I lived, and the old boy used to drive me around the suburbs, and he had an interest as well. And I thought, well, okay, well, I've got to follow that thread. So town planning actually got me into that space. So from there, the thing with town planning, it's a great discipline, but you're actually putting applications in for developers to make a lot of money. So you're
the middleman.
You're the middleman. You think, okay, guys, we've done all this for you, and then you watched it. So again, quickly, I sort of probably in 3 years, I worked out that I wanted to be part of that side of the property fence. So I was lucky enough to meet a high net worth guy that said, all right, Hamish, we've seen what you're doing for us in the town planning firm. I'll go 50-50 with you. I'll put in all the equity. You do all the sweat equity. And I want you to go and buy blocks of units. We're going to strata title them. We're going to renovate them all around Brisbane. So for the next 15 years, we did, I think, 45 blocks of units all around inner city Brisbane, which is a heap of fun.
That's cool. And just for those who might not be aware, can you just briefly explain strata titling?
Oh, yeah. So strata titling, give you an idea, you buy an unsliced loaf of bread, which is a block of flats, and one owner owns the loaf of bread with the block of flats. So strata titling, there would be, you would slice up the loaf of bread, and by way of a council function, you would then provide ownership for each slice of bread, which is each unit. So therefore, you convert one owner into six, or how many flats there are. So and imagine, you imagine when you're buying a loaf of bread, it's $4.
Yep.
But if you sold a slice of bread toasted, what are you getting for the piece of toast? $5?
Yeah, that's right. So you can make 10x.
So you buy a block of flats, say back in the day, for $400,000, but which is, and there's a six pack in there. So what's that? Six into 4 million is what?
Eight fifty.
But that's your raw cost, but you're selling them for $1.5 million strata title. So it's a big swing. So
And mostly, like you mentioned, six packs. So this is back in the day where there was a lot of these smaller, let's call them apartment blocks.
Yeah. I think the most we had in one block was 20 something in East Brisbane, interesting enough. But we had, and this is probably a segue into the sales thing, we just had a very simple model. We would use the cream and green on the front fence. We'd use the same picket fence. We'd always do the front first facade. We'd get a longer settlement. We'd be starting to sell before we had to settle.
And you would also, I guess, renovate for cosmetics. It's not like structural stuff. So it was all, let's just pretty these things up and make sure they're appealing and attractive for people.
Yeah. Crudely, a bog and flog. The property enthusiasts out there would understand what that means.
Yeah, that's cool. So great experience there. And you also have a significant part of New Farm that's, you know, I guess got a bit of your own identity attached to it. How did that come about?
Well, there's not many people around that have a street named after themselves anywhere in Brisbane, but obviously New Farm's an attraction suburb. So I was lucky enough to have a street named after myself. Long story short, I subdivided a block of land in New Farm, and the land that I subdivided, one of the streets, two street frontage, did not have a name. So you've got to go to council street naming department, and they said, "Well, Mr. Bowman, New Farm's very historical. There's Morton Street, Langshaw Street, Brunswick Street, Mirth. These are all significant people and historical." And I said, "Well, what about Bowman Street?" So they said, "Well, what's the significance there?" I said, my grandfather built the Village Twin, the very famous cinemas there in Brunswick Street." And they said, "Oh, that's a great idea. That's so good." Little did they know he was a brickage labourer. So I don't even know if he did a week there. But anyway, we wrangled that away. So there's a very famous, it's Bowman Lane for all those.
Bowman Lane in New Farm. And is New Farm currently the suburb with the highest value? Because I know it changes between Tenerife and...
Tenerife on a smaller, much smaller base is actually number one for median sale price.
Yeah.
Which I think has just clicked over $3
million. $3 million median. Yeah. And so New Farm coming
New
in.
New Farm's second, just sort of mid twos.
Yeah.
So.
Well, great place to have your name on a lane, hey?
It is.
I mentioned athletic talent too, because, I mean, that's how we met, right? So, you know, 2003, we were preparing ourselves for the Ironman triathlon back in the day. We met each other at the pool. We were both in the same swim squad together. And we got approached by the coach.
Did you call that swimming, that thing you did?
You went
sideways.
It wasn't pretty, was it? It was not pretty. Well, you try and throw these arms around in the water. It's not easy.
It's another thing I'll talk a bit later. Win your lane. And I don't think that's the lane you were ever going to win.
They had the various lanes too. They had the fast people in lane one. Then they went two, three, four. And I think he just goes, "Mate, you just go down the end. Just keep walking."
That lane was always up against the side of the pool too, so you had the coach in your ear the whole time.
Could always just stop and hang on to the end for a minute. So the coach says to us, Troy Fidler, he goes, we'll drive down to Foster Tongkurri to do this triathlon event. And he goes, "Mate, how are you getting down there?" I said, "I'm going to drive." He goes, "Who are you going with?" I said, "Nobody." He goes, "I've got a guy who might want to ride. You think you'd be up for a passenger?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." So 20 years ago, we hardly met each other. I rock up at your place, didn't I? I said, "Mate, I'm going to be outside at 5 a.m. The music's going to be pumping." Sure enough, that was how we met, wasn't it?
It was how we met. I was scared. There's music I've never heard of. Hip-hop stuff. Your car was emblazoned with your Peak Physique brandy at the time. I think you and your good wife,
were scantily clad all over it.
So, again, another story. We can talk about branding a little bit later in the podcast. But I was preloading on Succotar biscuits and a little bit of protein shake. And I looked in between the two of us in the side there. Somehow you'd wedged an esky of – and I opened it. There was about eight massive rolls full of just like meat.
Chicken and avocado.
How many did I eat on the way down? About four. I was that jealous.
You pull me out. You go, "Hey, mate, I bought this packet of Succotars. Would you like one?" I go, "What else did you bring?" You go, "That's it." So that was us.
I remember starting and finishing very swollen. having stayed with you before the start, I was stuffed before I started.
It was good. So in that journey, I mean, what was it, 6-7 hours or so forth? I don't think we stopped talking the whole way. So those probably listening in are probably getting a good sense on how that played out. That's for sure. So look, back to athletic ability, but just want to make a mention
enthusiast,
of your
rather. Talent.
Did I say enthusiast at the start?
No, I did. I'm keen to get out there.
You've done a couple of marathons in your day, so let's unpack that quickly. How many marathons you done?
24. Jesus. Unfortunately, it's been 24 for a few years now.
Yeah.
Last one was 2013.
Ooh, geez.
Yeah, yeah. So it's 10-year. In fact, I was trying to gear up potentially for 10-year reunion, but I got injured doing a half marathon this year. So, 24.
Best time?
Best time, 2:55 high.
Jesus.
2:55:53. 53 is important just for the purists would be onto me if I just said 2:55. It's too much of a gap that.
And that's that's running super fast, man. What pace per kilometre?
4:12.
Jesus.
So good. But the interesting thing,
I think I could do that for a kilometre today.
you did a Mara?
I've done a Mara, 3:29.
Yeah, okay. It's not shabby.
Not bad for a big unit.
3:30s. Sorry.
Fives, isn't it? 4:59s, I think.
Yeah.
5 minutes that's brings good. You in at 3.5. So,
Yep. So you were saying on the marathon. So, yeah, so look, the interesting thing with the marathon, anyone can run, right? And I wasn't necessarily a good runner, but it took me 7 marathons to break 3 hours. So I ended up doing 24. So I think I broke it. End up breaking it 10 times or something thereafter. But
in roughly how many years of like going from...
Oh, that was 15 years.
In 15 years break the...
No. It took me my 7th marathon. I think that was in my 3rd year.
It took you from a standing start and you were not into... Of course, you could run, you were fit, all that sort of stuff. But you went from that within 3 years, broke a 3-hour marathon.
Mm. Yeah. So it was... I think we shared the same coach, Rod Sodaro, actually, at the time. But... I finally worked out you needed the three pillars of the marathon was the track session, which was the 400s, 800s, the leg speed. You needed your Thursday hill session, which was just big air in the lungs, just building up that strength. There was a strength session, and then your long run, which is the weekend long run. And obviously there's you phase up through the weeks and you pause and you go again, but they're the three pillars. And by the time I worked that out, it was good. But what I, and interesting enough, we'll talk about as well. You need to measure this stuff. You need to, and every 5 weeks I do a 10K because your 10K was your barometer, how you're going to run. You could actually, there's a calculator you can track what your marathon's going to time if you put in your 10K time. So I had to keep getting my 10K time down. So every 5 weeks, I'd start at 43 minutes, then.
And that's a 10K at sitting at like anaerobic threshold or sitting at sort of max.
And 10Ks are good because you work out your pacing quicker because you can't go out and fluke a 10K.
Yeah.
You've got to, you blow up at 6K. So you learn pacing then because the marathon's all about pacing because if you're sitting at 4:12s and you go out at 4:04s, you're going at 27K. The big grand piano comes and drops on you. So
And what you told me on my first marrow was you go, mate, the turner at the halfway point is not the 21K turnaround. Yeah. It's 32. Yeah. It's when you hit 32. Up from 32, the last 10Ks feels like another 32. And it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. I mean, 32:10, that's your last 10K. So you've got to be reasonably fresh because if you're not, that 10K, if you'd end up walking half of it or doing 6-minute Ks, that's another hour still or an hour 20 for a lot of people. So, if you're not feeling good at 26, you've got to pull back.
Yeah.
And it's hard, but if you pull back 5 seconds a K, it's not a lot. You'll feel it, but it's not a lot at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Rather than blowing up and you're gone.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
I remember my first marathon. Was at Brisbane, and it was around Brisbane, West End. I remember Coronation Drive, and I remember sitting on the side of the gutter in West End at about the 24K mark, just fully blown, because my coach, Troy Fiddler, said, mate, he eyeballed me, but I didn't know he was joking at the time. He said, oh, mate, you are so fit. Go out hard and hold it. And, mate, oh, God, was that pumped? I just thought, oh, this is my day. And I went out way ahead of my pacing, and it was just the end of the day. 3:22, I think I did.
You got home in the end, did you?
Yeah, got home. 3:22. But I told the all family and friends, the fan club, I'll be there well before 3 hours. So it wasn't a great finish. But
they were about to send out the search party. Yeah. I remember that was from Ironman. They said, whatever you do, because it's a full day event, we start the swim in the dark in the morning at 6 a.m. or whatever. Then you finish it. Well, it depends how long you take, a bit longer for me than you. And it was like, whatever you do, don't be out there when they hand out the glow sticks. And I remember I'm coming in. I still got a couple of Ks to go. They're trying to hand out the glow sticks. I go, no.
It's a bad photo camera shot for the kids 30 years later because they'll work it out.
We also know another thing about marathon photos, because we've been featured in one or two of those marathon photos, haven't we? That you're out there, you're running, and you think that you're like, you know, you think you're the best runner in the whole event, right?
There's always an 80-year-old KT26s, whatever it is, and the one white sock, one black sock from his suit from Friday afternoon.
Somebody else is 150 kilos and you're out there. You're doing your big stride anyway. That's how it typically plays out. Let's go back to sales. So you moved into sales at a later stage of your life. How old were you when you embarked on real estate sales?
So just for 30 seconds to join that gap. So I went from that into working for a Sydney-based fund manager called Quantum. Then Quantum got bought out by a company called Da Vinci, which was Japan's largest private property fund, same size as like Mervac, but they were private. So I was the head of capital transactions. So I'd buy the assets, then we'd go on the pitch with the CEO, which was really fun. We'd go around the world to all the, it was wholesale money. This was all the church and the university pension funds and some family offices through New York and the States, through Europe. So it was a great time. And that's where I think I learnt the pitch side of things. It was very sophisticated, but you had to be on. You had every word you said was important. You couldn't stuff it up. And you know, we had executive committees in front of us, and you know, some of the most wealthiest families in the world in front of us. So that took a lot of rehearsal. You know, we practiced it 1,000 times to make sure it was right. And then I always felt like it was just a bit like we'd fly into a city, you know, and do three pitches, and then we'd find another city. So we would do 6 weeks in a row. Felt like the Rolling Stones. You know, you just come out, you'd go to a new city, the end of the day, you'd wake up, where are we? Chicago, you know, Washington, San Fran, the whole thing. So it was exciting, but the key thing there was the preparation there was so important.
Yeah.
The preparation for the pitch and what to say, and make sure you had all your every conceivable question ready to come back at us.
And gee, you must have met some interesting people on that journey, like the type of doors that might have opened in terms of connections and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, look, some of those connections are there today, which is good. And again, we'll talk about rapport and, you know, friendships and network. But Mario Salvo, who was our senior cornerstone investor, billionaire who brought Europe Car into Australia, yeah, still a very good friend. You know, he was a major, you know, contributor to my success, and he's a mentor to this day. I can ring up and ask him. So, if you've got billionaires in your, and again, I'm going to talk about this, all of us should have our own internal committee, you know, to refer to on a routine basis. So funds management. But what happened then, the market basically went south. Mario, interesting enough, he was so excited with the assets we bought, he wanted to hold them. But part of our model, we had to sell them, get returns, so we could spruik our returns to the next funds and the investors. So long story short, that was in Melbourne. So I came back to Brisbane, thought, okay, I want to put the toolkit back on. I just want to be, I've learned so much. I know enough. I just want to do this myself. And I thought the best way to get traction quickly in a quick dynamic market is residential sales, right? So went and knocked on the door of Matt Lancashire, who's obviously the number one agent for Ray White in Brisbane. He's a very good friend of mine, turns out. And he said, all right, well, here you go. Here's a desk, here's a phone.
Yep.
Interesting enough, again.
What year was that, sorry?
2014.
2014, so almost 10 years ago. Yeah.
He introduced
early 30s back then.
He introduced me then to my now business coach. He was using a business coach.
Yeah.
So what he does when he brings on a new person into his orbit, he'll say, okay, we're all happy. The last thing I want you to do is to meet Anne-Marie, and I want to make sure that she thinks that you're the right person, which I think is a good final step for anyone, which I now do myself, nevertheless. Matt said to Anne-Marie, which is interesting, okay, look, Hamish has obviously got the experience. He's not like a 20-year-old who's straight out of uni. But is he coachable? Can we coach him at this point in time?
Such a critical question.
Such a critical question. Because, okay, I needed coaching. I still needed to know how to sell a residential house. I would learn quickly, but I still needed to know there's some steps and there's some processes and some systems and all that sort of thing. So luckily I got the tick of approval. And to this day, in my new business, fast forwarding, I have Anne-Marie come and meet my team individually, and then we have a wrap up ourselves on who's, you know, and it's all open slather.
Mm.
What's bad about Hamish? What are you enjoying? What are you loving? What are you hating? And then we have a really good, and anyone new that comes on meets Anne-Marie as well. So, and she's a business coach and she's real estate based.
Yeah, so important. Couple of bits there is that number one is the importance of surrounding yourself with mentors, with coaches, with people that have that level of expertise to get the best out of you. Mm-hmm. And that question of coachable, it's exactly what we ask people before they start up with us at Train HQ. Question number one is people we work with, they need to be coachable. They need to be open to ideas, mm-hmm. suggestions, mm-hmm. recommendations. Is that you? Are you coachable? And you're looking for an overwhelming yes, because if they're not, well, we can't help you. Mm. Yeah. So cool. And so almost 10-year journey. Now, when you kicked off in real estate, but it wasn't all smooth sailing, right?
No, you had to go for it. Yeah, I had to go for it. Yeah.
Tell us about the early days of what you had to do to build.
When I think tough, I think how many divorces are we going to talk about here, and how many dry gullies and GFCs? There's been a lot. There's been a lot of downs. So I picked hitting real estate, if you want to start there, which would be good because that'll get rid of a lot of the bad stuff. 2014, we decided to come back. We just bought a house and young kids, the whole story. And basically I had to say to Alex, my wife then, We got to batten down the hatches here. She's a pharmacist. She'd have to go and work more hours. But look, even if this goes great and I'm trying to sell it, I'm great at this point and I've done nothing. Yeah. This is this is 6 months of awful, you know, we're going backwards. So what they legally had to do was put me on a debit credit, which I think was $600 a week. And then what they do is you accumulate debt, which is wages.
So they pay you $600 a week, so you can get by.
And then at a point they say, okay, you're good enough, off you go. And then you got to make that up again with your commission. So your first commission you never see.
Yeah, because you're paying that back off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough. I got off that within 3 or 4 months, which is cool. I mean, some people sit on it for years. So Matt Lancashire gave me my first listing as soon as I walked in the door. And we're sort of away. That turned into 4 listings, and I was away. So
yeah.
It was tough. You just had to. For people your audience that are starting out. I think it's important to get buy-in from your clan, right? You got to say, look, you got to get them on board. Because I remember days sitting on the driveway thinking, oh shit, what am I going to say? You know, there's been an extension to the settlement. Oh shit, the family's waiting for that money to come in to pay the bills and all that sort of thing. And so it's, I think, look, it's a belief that you're going to get through this. Like I just knew in the system I was in, it was a well-worn system. You come in the front door, you work like a drover's dog for 2 years.
Yep.
You learn as much as you can. And then they clip your wings, they throw you out on your own with a very good base of knowledge and some routine, some structure, some consistency. And, luckily for me, I was the quickest guy to get to an elite in Ray White. I think it was 18 months or something from zero to hero in terms of gross commission. But I had to. I didn't have any other option.
Yeah,
So I just had to, it's 7 days a week. It's phones all on all the time.
And can you tell us a bit about what you were doing in that first phase to build? How many outreaches might it have taken, type of hours, phone calls.
So basically, initially, you're supposed to be making about 100 calls a day.
Yeah.
Calls, not connects. So it ends up being about 30 connects probably. One in three. They give you a sheet and it's having 100 and you put the name on, old school, and you just sit there and you just think, okay, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I've got 40 to make. So I'll do the last 10 on the way home because it's Brookfields, it's a half an hour drive. So. This is the thing. Calls are so important. I heard recently real estate and religion, they're about the only two places that people get calls, like cold calls.
Yeah.
Like, do you get a call from an accountant saying, hey, hey, have you considered me as your accountant or a lawyer or a plumber or...
No, doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. Like what's wrong with saying, hey, you know, I noticed you're in the street, I saw your branding or whatever, love to have a chat, notice you're doing this, you know, just a little bit of rapport. Mm. You'd have a coffee with an accountant if you hit it. If someone said to me, hey, Hamish, I'm an accountant, I specialise in reducing tax...
For real estate agents.
Yep. I'd be down there.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not enough of that going on.
Yeah.
Like,
you know. So, and I think back to calls, I think it's probably the modern era of the overseas call centre, which is, you know, half of it's spam or spruiking, you know, solar panels or something like that. So I think there's a very negative connotation around it. However, in terms of business to business, person to person, I'd say I'd agree with you. There's a very small percentage of people that, you know, have a genuine connection around that.
And this is the other thing, which to be good at sales, you've got to be good at rapport, right? So it's not hard. So in real estate, we'll have someone come through our open home and I'm selling your house, Bradley, which I've done for you twice.
Yep, you have.
and I'll say, okay, so Joe Bloggs has been through the house, Mark Smith. And he's about to put an offer in. So we want to know, what does Mark do? How many kids has he got? What's his job? Where does he live? And what's his reason for moving? So we're already doing some due diligence on those sorts of people to work out what they do. So we've generally say, look, if you don't mind me asking, what's your what do you do for a living? Everyone will tell you. Like they don't mind. But
yeah,
you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to get, in our job, you want the buyer to like a seller, sort of like the buyer. So if you're a bit more sweet, rather than saying, hey, this buyer, five buyers sort of thing, you know, it's definitely worth digging down. It's with so much information in front of us, LinkedIn, Facebook, we've got everything.
It's not hard, is it?
We've got a thing called ID for me in real estate, which basically I put your name in to this thing, I'll know your phone number, your email address.
Yeah.
Right? So we've got everything. Right, this day and age. So
there's absolutely no reason why you can't start to build a profile around someone, get some understanding of them and so forth.
Yeah, and going back onto the rapport side, talking about, you know, let's say you're a PT and you want to build your business and you think, who am I going to hit up? And just like, it's not hard to find something. So I'll have a look at LinkedIn and I'll think, okay, oh, he knows Joe Bloggs from school. And I'll say, I couldn't help but seeing, you know, Billy from school days or something. Yep. And then it's just a conversation piece. If I go into a house, I'm actually bad at a lot of things, but I'm really good at rapport. So I'll walk into the door and my eyes will be looking for a bike, a bottle of wine, a horse photo, what sort of car, you know, books on the shelf, anything. So you've got your top five things
because, you know, with all those things, a bike, you got conversation piece from cycling, from triathlon. Won't be long before you've told them about your marathon efforts.
Right. There's always a running shoe too. So I'll go to the brand. Oh, those Hockers or those Clouds or so. All of a sudden, I got them talking, and I'll say, "Okay, should we go through the house?" And you're already rather than this awkward sort of position. I said, "I'll say, why don't you be the real estate agent and take us through the house?" It's like it's just a role, you know, sort of thing. So
yeah.
But interesting enough, did I tell you I bought into a horse?
You did.
Okay, so I bought into a horse. The reason being, and I sold this into my accountant, but as I go up the price curve on my sales, we're more in the prestige market these days, it's surprising, it's uncanny how many people have got their horses down their hallway of their
race
house.
Horse.
The racehorses. Yeah. So I've upskilled my knowledge set on racehorses in a hurry. So I can talk about the horses and trainers now and all sorts of things. And all of a sudden, you couldn't... The whites of the eyes of people that own horses and how excited they get, they can talk about it for hours, right? You know, if someone's a bike enthusiast, you talk about his bike.
Yep.
So it's just how many strings you've got in your bow. So it's a new little string.
Well, you messaged me about it. You said, guess what, I just bought a race. So I said, of course you did.
Anyway, the thing's costing me a lot at the moment. it hasn't had a race yet. It's just eating in a paddock somewhere.
So I want to double back to the tipping point for you in terms of when there was that first year and then the 18 months and you had some really great success. was there a couple of things which sort of enabled you to tip over into, I guess, going from, hey, I'm just feeling like I'm just pushing really hard and I'm not quite there yet, and then suddenly the event came when you're going, okay, cool, things are starting to move in the right direction?
Yeah. So typically when anyone starts, they'll go wide. So they'll go to a friend or a family, and they'll go agent style, they'll go geographically, they'll go anywhere. What I was able to work out quickly, I always say, guys, you've got to win your lane, right? So you've got to win that lane you're in. So are you two-bedroom units in Bowen Hills, or are you, prestige waterfront? I had a background in that, in my historical track record of selling off the plan projects. So I have started selling some projects. So what happens there is, so the lane that I could win, and it's still a lane, there's only two or three competitors in Brisbane that do this, whereby you sell a block of units in a good position, in a good suburb.
Yep. So you take ownership of the sales of the whole building, the development.
Yep. So from the ground up. And then what happens is the downsizer market's a massive market here in Brisbane, right? So it's 80% of the people coming from the outer burbs, coming into Jason, your partner said that he was looking to move back in. It's just a well-worn, that's what happened. So I call that project the honeypot, because buyers come in there, they reach out to me, I talk to them, we get rapport. I often sell them a unit, and then I'll say, hey, by the way, then we'll look at back end, see what they own. So, look, I notice you own a nice house in Ascot. Wouldn't mind having a look at the right time. So, oh, absolutely, come and have a look at it. So I haven't prospected them, I haven't cold called them, I haven't, sat there. They've come to me, and then so I've got this model. So that's the model that I've refined. So that's my...
Your niche.
That's my niche.
Your
that's
niche within inside a niche.
Yeah, so within inside a niche. So, and it's just one of the... It's hard. It's a hard market to crack for new people, and it's often misunderstood as an agent. A lot of agents just... Because you get paid for half of it on the contract, and you get paid the other half when the building's complete. So, it's
so
a long way.
You've got to be prepared from a business point of view to have the available capital or cash flow or something to go, okay, cool, because there could be a period in time before I wait to get that settlement.
That's right. And there is risk. As you know, at this time in the market, there's builders going broke, and there's the market and the projects are pausing. Luckily enough, we haven't got that.
Yeah.
And you learn to pick projects. You've got to say no sometimes as well, Brad, to some business.
Yeah, it's and back to the, I guess, back to the personal trainers and fitness businesses, we go, okay, cool, I start off as a PT, who do I train? Well, it could be anything to anyone. I can train anyone, anywhere, anytime. And although you probably could, it's maybe not a great strategy, because where are those people? They're very hard to find. They're everywhere, right? So it's like back to the niching side, and that's why this part's so critical. Once you niche, we know exactly where to find those people. You know exactly the type of people we need to speak to, the conversations we need to have, the marketing message. It cascades down the whole way.
I think that's important. No matter, I remember Brad, back in your personal training days, there was one guy, I mean, apart from you, there was one guy that you'd go to just for biceps, Frankie.
Yep.
Remember? And he was the bicep king, wasn't he?
He was.
So I'd train with you, but I was jealous that I wasn't training with Frankie, because I just wanted big biceps. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he was just known for that. Like,
yeah.
And whether or not there's a bit of fun in it, but I just remember that, right? So, so I think you've got to work out, if you can work out what you're good at and what you're not so good at.
Yeah.
But like, I want to go to I now go to an orthopedic surgeon because I've got a tear. He specializes from the shoulder to the elbow. He's not just an orthopedic surgeon.
Not just the general bloke. No. Yeah.
If I go to a physio now, I want to go to a physio who's the back king. I don't want to go to a general physio.
No.
So, like, I'm not sure how that transcends into PT.
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
So the other part of your evolution, of course, in the development of Hamish Bowman Properties is your brand. And you've worked really hard on the brand. You've got the experts in. You've really positioned yourself. So can you explain to us a bit about your take on brand and why you found it to be important?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, I was with Ray White for, call it, 10 years. And they're a very good, one of the best brands in the world. Privately run, so in terms of real estate. So I learned a lot there. As I was leaving there, I was lucky enough because I had a good enough business. So I was actually branding myself within Ray White. So I, you know, sort of a lot of HB within the Ray White model. So when I finally left, it wasn't a massive change, but the things that I wanted to make sure, because we were sort of a boutique high-end product, that is a sales agency, and look, interesting enough, like a sales agency now, and I think this is can segue link across to you, we're a marketing machine that sells property, right? And I think that's what you got to, this day and age, you got to be marketing yourself, right, if to be successful. So we sort of took that on board. And so I always say to people that are in and want to talk about branding, hey, just go and buy me a just go to Nespresso in the city or go to Apple and come back and tell me how your experience was, right? You know, you go there in Nespresso. I don't know if you bought pods.
Mm.
I've got a machine now, but I used to go and buy pods, right? And you're in the lineup. They'd ask you how you were. Would you like this? Would you like that?
Would you like a coffee?
The packaging, the pods, everything just seemed amazing. You just wanted to sit in that little shop, sit at the bar and have a coffee.
And you can go and buy those same pods, you know, the Woolies brands or whatever for what, a third of the price, right?
Yeah.
But you want to experience what it's like to go there.
Same with Apple. I mean, just that, you know, they're well run, the staff are well dressed, they look current.
Yep.
The packaging's amazing. You know, it's a great product. So I usually say go to those two and come back to me and tell me what you learned. Some people say I didn't learn much at all. So, well, mate, you're not the right bloke for me. But we just wanted to be...
Okay, I'll just come back a couple of grand lighter from Apple.
we just wanted to have that same sort of experience with our customers. So we wanted, in terms... So we went expensive on... When I say expensive, we got... And you've met my brand... You know, I got a branding, external branding firm to do all our... Again, our messaging, you know...
Yep.
What does the team look like? You know, where we should be positioned in terms of marketing, our brochures, our website, we're big on socials. And look, you can do all that, Brad.
And
this
on,
is the point.
On that, for our people tuning in, just to, in terms of Insta, you'd be happy for them to go and check this out so they can see it in the flesh. What's the Insta handle?
It's Hamish Bowman _ or Hamish Bowman Properties.
Okay.
Yeah.
One or the other, or you got there's two.
Two. There's two. There's a business and mine. Both. Right. Both.
Which one should we send them to first?
Go Hamish Bowman _.
Hamish Bowman _.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Sweet. We'll stick this in the notes as well.
Yeah. I think look, the main thing for us is your branding. We decided to go luxe, high end. So everything, every experience that people from the first time we meet them, you know, thanks the box of chocolates. Yeah. The flowers,
the whole bottle thing, of champagne,
all that sort of thing. But, and then you know, just the packaging, just the box that we have a proper box, and we have a proper ribbon, and we have a tailored card. We have the right pen. We have a black card. We have the right pen, which is a white ink that comes through. Like everything's measured, you know, in terms of what goes out. So we make sure that's totally on point.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the branding piece. But in terms of the marketing branding, I think the important thing that I learned is you can't just go and say, okay, let's go and dump 1,000 cards into a street, or let's go and call them, or let's go and do some messaging. You've got to have a plan for 6 months. You've got to layer. And a lot of agents, I've seen so many agents, and I've been guilty with myself saying, oh, shit, that didn't work. Let's go and do this. But you haven't given enough sample piece to work out whether it's worked or not. Because, you know, for us, we've got to be talking to people. To an audience, and again, our newsletter. We've got 10,000 people get the newsletter. We had virtual assistants go through about 3 months ago. Would you still like to receive them? Just because you don't want to piss people off.
Yeah.
So we took them off if they didn't want to.
And you'd much rather have unsubscribes, and that's the thing we often tell our clients as well. It's like, well, if you get unsubscribed, that's fine because people are going, well, I'm not really engaging in this, and you'd much rather have that than them not open it, and not be a part of it. So. Yeah.
So you'd rather a fit database. Than a,
absolutely.
Than a frumpy one that's not engaging with you. A bit like you at the moment. what have we got next?
It's so good. And then that leads into the CRM, which, of course, we've had many conversations about CRM, and it's a part, an integral part of what we teach our clients to do is to have the right setup and the right structure around that. How important to you is your database and your CRM? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not my skill set. Brad. I'm coming from someone who likes front of house people, but I've had to learn that the data is king.
Well, with all due respect, I mean, we've been besties for what, 20 years, and I've said many times you couldn't organise a route in a brothel.
No, I couldn't, unfortunately. So I have learned that the database is important. So we've gone to the laboratory. We segment our, we call them categories. So we categorise our database for what messaging. So we don't want to blast 10,000 people, because on a daily basis we'll have adjust lists that are just sold, coming to market, you know, weekly newsletters. So people don't want to get 10 newsletters. So we'll say, okay, let's hit Riverfront, let's hit Ascot, let's hit Boom.
So these are all segmented in these different,
yes.
Yep.
So because we've got a big database, we just don't want to flood them. So so we're always curating our categories. So we've got new people coming into our business by Op Homes. We focus on property owners. So we want to, as soon as someone comes through an open home, we'll have a look. Okay, Brad Shepherd's come through. Okay, he owns a house in Newstead, Hurston. That looks like a nice house. We'll put him on our hot list. We'll ask him if he wants to sell. He'll say, no, I don't want to sell for, maybe next year. Have a chat next year. So we categorise our pipeline. So we have a pipeline. Yeah. I run through 0 to 3. So 0 to 3, which is hot. My number one sales associate runs 3 to 12, which is warm. Then we have what we call a 1 to 7. The 1 to 7 is because the average people will say, I won't sell. And they will generally sell. The average is 7 years. So we in the 1 to 7, we reach out to them every quarter.
Gotcha. Whereas someone who's sitting in or on the cusp of that 7 years, you go, I've owned for, let's say, 7 years. Yeah. You'll so go, you're, this guy's probability says there's
yeah,
a chance.
Yeah, a chance, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's all good. So it's just being able to talk to your database without flooding them, we find. But again, the key thing is that, and we've learned, but we want to give people knowledge. We want to give them information. We don't want to ring up and say, hey, how's it going? How's your day? Do you want to sell?
Yeah.
That's, in our game, cheesy. Mm. You want to be saying, hey, Brad, I don't know if you've seen, number 23 to sell. Big price, good price. That's X square meter, great rate. What do you think about that? And generally, if we're on it, we'll know about it before you. So we'd hope to say that, the other thing is I'm big on the news. So I like to know, it's easy to say, hey, Brad, at the moment we can talk about a war, interest rates, just at the Melbourne Cup. What else has happened overnight? Albo Economics.
And, yep.
We flopped us.
Yeah.
Flopped us. Optus has just gone down.
Flopped us.
So you can get people laughing and joking and anything. So it's just, and then getting to where they want to be. You can make people comfortable in sales.
Yeah.
You don't want to, this tense chat, whereas, when's he going to ask me, they know why you're calling.
Yeah.
But just, and this is the other thing. We've had a few other things, haven't we? I find the more that you talk to them, and the more that you're going to get a phone pickup, right? So
the more times you can engage in them, a conversation, SMS as well.
SMS, So some people we know, we do an SMS. So we miss a call, we ring you and go through your keeper.
Yep.
We'll send you a text. Hey, Brad, just give you a call. Just want to let you know.
Yep.
25 Smith Street just sold. Just sort of don't even want a call back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And that's a system, what you're talking about there.
It's a system, yeah.
What, what percentage of property owners, when you're making these outreaches, believe that their property is worth more than what it actually is?
Oh, 120%. Haven't found one yet that said, oh, mine's not worth as much as the one next door.
Now, you've already touched on team, you've got a good crew around you. How many to run the engine at the moment?
Yeah, I've just run one, they call it an effective business unit. So basically at the moment, to run an EBU, it's a real estate term, you basically want a gun sales associate, preferably two. You want sort of an operations guy. You want a PA. And we've got concierge. Prue, my sister, runs concierge. So concierge is...
Customer care.
Yeah.
Service.
Service.
Yeah.
Things for... and she also runs our anniversary anniversary calendars and
gifts and
gifts and all that sort of thing. So, which is takes a lot of pressure off us actually. So, which is good. So
yeah.
So that's so talking 10 to 6.
Yeah.
And awesome. There's an external accountant that's on our what I talked about before, our committee.
Yeah.
He sits on a 30-minute call every week. We've got
says mate, you're earning too much. You need to buy another racehorse.
he took a bit of convincing on the racehorse, but anyway.
You would have sold that home. It would have been your best sell of the year, wouldn't it?
And then we've got an external HR and compliance lawyer, retired lawyer.
Yeah, so you have a number of people who are not on salary. They're got your media crew. There's all that part as well. Yeah, yeah. So
and the last we've got a consultant who does our styling for us, comes in when we go through the house and styles and gives recommendations, that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, and that is the engine.
That's it.
Yeah, how cool, man.
So I think thinking about trainers, and this is very similar to a commonly asked question when you're a standalone agent. You get to that point where you think, oh, shit, I'm overloaded. Agents say, I'm overloaded, I'm on my own, I've got to do bloody
calls. So I'm just still doing 100 calls, yeah, plus I'm doing the meetings.
I'm doing the brochures, plus, and I'm handing out properties. I can't. So there comes a point where you think, oh, can I afford that $60,000 a year for a PA?
Yeah.
The advice is to do it. If you're thinking about it, it's one step back for 30 forward. It's just you've got, and then you can scale. Yeah. Then you can do, generally salespeople are good at the front end. They're good at listing. And the other thing I would note, that my observation is, you don't have to be an extroverted energy person. Energy is key in real estate and sales, but you don't have to be that stereotypical car, watch, how great. The best real estate agent in Australia is a guy called Alexander Phillips in Sydney.
Yeah.
And he's not extroverted. He wears these. He makes 100 calls. His calls are a minute 42
per day. Wow. On average, that's how long a call goes for?
Yeah. Number one agent in Australia. And he'll actually, you can get in and watch him.
Right? Yeah.
I've watched him. And he doesn't say, he'll just say, hi, Brad, boom. Are you ready to go or not, basically? Because he's spoken to them so many times.
Yeah.
You don't need to talk about the weather.
So he's built a reputation. He's built rapport.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, Brad.
They know who he is. They like him. They trust him.
So you don't need to be, again, those guys find a way to be the best, another angle. And he found it's just like he's a full information guy. Are you ready? Knows every sale on the street.
Has all the data, the stats.
All the data.
Yeah.
He's big on saying, he talks about financial markets globally and that sort of thing. He's in eastern suburbs in Sydney. He says a lot of, international flavour.
So less on selling on charisma and flamboyancy and so forth. And just more about, hey, he knows his stuff. Yeah.
The point is, you don't have to just be that. Like, as a trainer and if, building teams, you don't have to be one. You don't have to look like Brad Shepherd to be a good trainer. Probably helps, but do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I've seen skinny, good personal trainers.
Yeah, great ones out there. Yeah. And you're exactly correct. The personality types. There's so many of them: introverts, extroverts, and so forth. And really, what I'm hearing about this and how this all wraps up, it's about the system, and that's the most important thing. And that really speaks about your journey of building this company, of what you've done and how you do it.
I think two, with consistency, and you need a splash of resilience in there. Because every day, because we're a robust daily, like I had an email and a call just on the front here, which was a deal, which has gone back a step just in a call this morning, which will, it could potentially rattle me. Like, you've just got to, I'll be back on the phone and we'll make it good. But like, we get not great news on an hourly basis or half daily basis. So you've got to be resilient. You're going to get people that don't like you or the way you do business, as long as you do it ethically and say, okay, that's fine. It's just, let's move on. Let's learn from it.
Yeah.
Take it on board or not. And then, I think for longevity, and I think it's also continual improvement. You've got to be seeking to be better.
Yeah, and that's definitely something you do. You embrace that part. Look, from a physical perspective, you talk about your life in terms of, nutrition, in terms of exercise, activity, and so forth. I mean, it's how we first connected, right, through exercise, and we built that bond and that connection through there. But then we got to learn about, you know, property. I got to learn about property. Hungarians. We talked business. Yeah, we married a couple of Hungarians, didn't we?
We did.
And so we're still related, and, you know, how cool. But you look at all that, where does it start from? And it starts from, I guess, all those habits.
Are we related anymore?
I think we would be. I mean, you know, our children are cousins. So
oh, yeah, that's true. Yes,
I guess we could say that we're connected through that perspective.
Okay.
I still call you Billy anyway.
Yeah, I like that. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And HB calls me Billy.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Tass.
Yeah. He's still in the clique. So, mate, any sort of final points? I mean, there's been a wealth of information, and I think anyone listening to this would really take away from it on all levels. But, you know, any final points to wrap this up?
I think we've probably hit all the high notes on the sales. Mm. I think at the end of the day, for me, and you and I know this, it's an energy game. It's a frequency. You got to dial in. I know you dial in the mornings. When I'm on, I've dialed in the mornings. Like,
well, we usually know. I've got about three people in my life that we can message each other at 3:30 a.m. and I'll get a response. Yeah. And you're definitely one of them.
Yeah, so I wake up early and go to bed early. But I just know that the people around me need to work off my energy levels, right? So whether it's clients, my people, my team,
yeah.
If I'm flat, everyone goes flat. So yeah. It's just it's and you can make this part of your DNA,
yeah,
which you sort of have, right? So and that blends into nutrition and mindset and but like I've got a psychologist, like I've got a head coach, and I've reached out into good space. Who wouldn't teach their head? Like, it's the most important thing.
Yeah,
you know, like just like how to treat things.
Yeah, and when you say you reach out into good space, i.e., you reach out in terms of proactive from, you know, I'm doing well and I want more. I want to do better.
Yeah. So, like I think it's all costs, but I think the more people we can get into your team of coaches, mentors, advisors, it just makes life so much easier. I think everyone should have their own little board, internal board. You know, they are accountable to.
You mean your team of experts you've got around you, people you can leverage off.
Yep. And make that a routine. So we do it monthly. You know, I'll open up the bonnet and, what have we done? What haven't we done? So there's an accountant, there's a finance broker, just anyone that's not related to the business.
Mm. And it forms that level of accountability and the ability for you to keep moving forward in this business and your personal life, and so interconnected as well. That's the other part to it, is that, you know, there's so much crossover between all the above. Man, so good. First things first, I guess, wrapping up for everyone listening to this, I want to say thanks for sharing this wisdom and the knowledge. I've personally witnessed the growth. I've personally witnessed what you've done, everything you've built. And you're just that person who loves to share. So, like, in terms of building rapport, you're always the one who, hey, man, you should check this out or take a look at this or introduce you to this person. I mean, back in my personal training business at Peak Physique, you were our gold class number one referrer. And we'd go through your
reaches out for that book. I don't know where it is now.
We go through your phone and you go, hey man, ring this guy and ring this guy. Right. And I haven't spoken to him for a while. Tell him Hamish says he's a big fat bastard and he needs to get his ass in the gym. And I'd use that copy verbatim and it would work, you know.
We'd have coffee and I'd say, all right, we ring A, B and C. Yeah. And I said, tell him he's fat, he's got to get back to the gym.
So, yeah, man, wonderful journey and, yeah, just been an absolute pleasure witnessing it and, the personal relationship that we have. So I want to say, from my perspective, a huge thank you.
We're going to go and train now?
Fuck yeah. That's what we do best, eh?
Thanks, Bradley.
They think flapping the gums is what we do best, but, you know, you should see us in the gym. We make a lot of racket and noise. We don't do much fun. No, we have a go. Thank you very much, Hamish Bowman.
Thanks very much, guys.